Hey, what's up, Cub fans? Welcome to episode 126 of Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Ryan Davis. I'm here with Sean Sears. We're both writers for NBC Sports Chicago, or at least on my part, occasionally. Sean does a little more regular work for them. I also write for Bet Chicago, and we do this whole Locked On Cubs thing every day. So how's it going, man?
It's going good. I'm back in the suburbs today. Which is a little weird for me because I haven't been, I don't think I've recorded a podcast in the suburbs ever, weirdly. So new territory.
Yeah. So amazingly, the Cubs did all the things yesterday that we said yesterday on the podcast that they never do.
Yeah.
They jumped out to an early lead. They got timely hits with two outs. They got a man on base, and then Anthony Rizzo popped a homer in the first inning for a two-run shot. I mean, it was just a good overall game. The Cubs won 8-4. They did all those things that they just don't consistently do ever, and it was fun to watch that. On the pitching side, Hendricks had another better than his stat line kind of performance. He went into the seventh inning strong, gave up only two earned runs to that point, but he allowed the first two batters to reach, so Madden pulled him for Carl Edwards Jr., and Edwards had just an unusual off game. So Hendricks, his stat line was six innings, four earned runs, seven hits, two walks, struck out eight. Anthony Rizzo and Albert Almora homered. Jason Hayward was 3-for-5 with two doubles. Javier Baez hit a triple. And that's just kind of it for the game.
Yeah, it was nice to finally see the offense break out. Interestingly, Anthony Rizzo, excuse me, course, we talk about him moving him out of the leadoff spot, hits a two-run home run in the fourth spot, and further making me wish I wrote my article earlier. It felt like a good offensive game. You felt confident in this team going out there, having good at bats, a ton of good solid hits into the gap, down the line, some home runs. It was like a very encouraging offensive game, one of the first ones we've seen in a while.
Tonight the Cubs send John Lester to the mound in Pittsburgh against Ivan Nova. Over his last seven starts, Lester has been bad. ERA of 8.65, 48 hits allowed in 34 and a third innings. Nova hasn't been stellar either. He has a 5.35 over his last seven, only two quality starts in that span. So this season versus the Cubs, however, 12 and two-thirds innings with four earned runs over two starts. This will be Lester's fifth start against the Pirates this year, believe it or not. And he's allowed 12 earned runs in 23 innings so far. So not good. Thoughts on tonight's matchup?
Yeah, I don't know. The Cubs just don't hit Nova very well. They've got like a .221 batting average against him. They just don't really hit him very hard ever. Their exit velocity is 84.3 miles per hour. Not good. I don't know. He's a guy that the Cubs just don't seem to be squaring up very well. So maybe that changes today, but I don't know. We'll have to see.
Yeah, this is a weird matchup for them because you would think that they would do better against a guy who's around the strike zone more.
Exactly.
But really, they can't handle him. He's a guy who pitches to contact. He doesn't walk people. You know, he lives on those edges, kind of like John Lester when he's going on his best. But the Cubs just can't seem to barrel him up, like you said. They can't put together big strings of innings against him.
Yeah, interestingly enough, though, I mean, like you said, contact for sure. Navoa's FIP is 4.58 against the Cubs. So clearly, he's very dependent on his infielding to make him look good. So he's pitching to contact, but if the Cubs can maybe get a hold of him and, you know, crush one out of the park here in PNC, I mean, right field is a little bit closer, so who knows? Maybe the lefties pull some balls. But, I feel like the Cubs are going to have to hit some home runs to really do some damage today because Navoa seems like the exact type of guy they would get seven hits and not score runs on.
Yeah, that definitely seems like the kind of like the Pirates score five runs on four hits and the Cubs score one run on eight hits and that's the end of the game. That seems like the kind of thing that would happen tonight with Lester versus Nova, the way the two teams have kind of gone.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm a little leery for this. That being said, I could also see the Cubs just, you know, starting the inning off hot and hitting two home runs in the first inning and have a 5-0 lead too. So I guess it all depends on the mentality the Cubs have coming out. But yeah, Noboa seems like a guy that could really shut down his offense, which frustrating.
Yeah. We'll talk a little bit more about the Pirates series coming up in the second segment. Let's go back to Hendricks. He's looked really good his last few times out. Again, he's had a couple games lately where it's just like at the end of the game, you're kind of like, wow, that was a stat line. He just looked absolutely on, especially early in the game. I think it's been an issue of like later in the games when he's going, like in the third, fourth, fifth inning, he is giving up like a couple runs here and there, maybe like hitting a patch where he struggles and then he settles down. So where is our concern level with him? Has it faded almost completely? He doesn't look like the Hendricks of like when he was perfect, like back in 2016 in the second half when he was just mowing guys down, but he's striking out a lot of batteries. He's getting movement on his pitches. The velocity's good. He's putting it where he wants to. Are we pretty much okay with Hendricks as like, okay, so he's fine?
That's how I feel. I mean, he had 8 strikeouts yesterday. The 2 walks are what kind of kills him a little bit, but yeah, I mean, he looks like Kyle Hendricks. Like he said, the last like 2 or 3 starts, I've been very surprised when I've seen his stat line after the game, because I remember watching like popping in for a couple innings and being like, okay, yeah, Kyle looks good. But yeah, I feel like at this point it really is, you know, Kyle Hendricks probably safe bet for the rest of the year. Like, you know, you just hope for consistency. I'm not concerned about it. I think Kyle is
going to
be the rest.
Yeah, no, I'm not really concerned about him either. It's with the rest of the rotation, I would say that right now my confidence level is probably Hendricks number one with at least the guys who are out there. Maybe Cole Hamels number two, just because we haven't seen him more than just a couple starts. But everyone else pretty much, like Mike Montgomery, he's been pitching really well, but I feel like he's going to end up in the bullpen at some point before the end of the year.
Yeah, I agree with that. I just think his innings totals, they've got to be leery about. I think he's like topped out at like 130, and he's probably on pace for like 160, 170 innings if he were to keep starting. So, yeah, I think once one of these pitchers gets healthy, the move is to get, you know, Montgomery back in the bullpen, get him back, you know, used to just an inning or two of pitching and, you know, go from there. But, yeah. Yu Darvish would be nice right about now.
Yeah, that would make things quite a bit more comfortable. And the other thing that would make things more comfortable is John Lester returning to somewhat closer to John Lester form. He doesn't have to be 2016 John Lester, and I don't think he can do that anymore, but he needs to be, I can't even say like earlier in the season John Lester, because that, you know, he was getting results, but some of the peripherals weren't that good. He just needs to be okay. He needs to be like, I can go out there and give you 6 strong innings with, you know, maybe 2 or 3 earned runs or 3 or 4 earned runs. Like that would be okay. If you can go 6 innings and give me 3, maybe 4 earned runs and not throw a ton of pitches, give the Cubs a chance. I feel like that would be okay at this point. But lately it's just been like early blowups and the Cubs are trailing really, really quickly. It's just been not the kind of competitive stuff that you would expect from him.
Yeah, I don't know. We talked about it all the time, about how he doesn't feel comfortable on the mound is really how it is. Like, he feels like he can't execute. But yeah, if you can get John Lester just like closer to the mean of what John Lester's stats are like throughout his career, that's a million times better than what we're seeing now. Just because, I mean, the guy's getting nailed in some of his starts. I mean, even just like his most recent start against Pittsburgh, he gave up 4 runs in 5 innings on 7 hits, 3 walks. It seems like when he's walking guys is when you see the run totals go up quite a bit. So, I mean, I don't know. He's got to locate. I think in his last 3 starts, 4 starts against, yeah, God, in his 4 starts this year against the Pirates, he has walked, oh my God, like close to 20 guys. Not good. You know, like,
I think you might be looking at the wrong category. In his, 4 starts against the Pirates, he's walked 8 guys.
Yep. I totally looked at strikeouts.
Yeah. I was just like, I have it right in front of me. So I was like, wait a minute. No. But yeah, now the
walk killing him here, though. I mean, 8 walks, yeah, and 4 starts against the Pirates is bad. you know, free runs a lot of times with the way Lester's been pitching, especially since he's been so dependent on contact this year. So, I mean, he's really, if he's not getting his calls, he's in trouble.
Yeah, it looks like the walks, at least the last few starts, haven't been the worst for him. It's, six walks and four starts. So that's not so bad. He pitched well against the Diamondbacks. He had a really good game against them, coming out of a bad game against the Cardinals, in which he went three innings with seven hits and eight earned runs, five walks. Against the Diamondbacks, six innings, four hits, zero walks, seven strikeouts, one earned run. But since then, five innings, seven hits, three walks, four earned runs, three strikeouts, five innings, eight hits, five runs, three and two-thirds innings, 10 hits, eight earned runs. It just seems like he gets hit hard. That really seems to be the main issue. Like the walks when they've been there are really bad, but it just seems like batters are just squaring him up. And I don't know if it's just he's not locating like he needs to and can't get those calls on the edges, so he's having to go more over the plate, or if he's just missing over the plate. I don't know what it is, but it just seems like he lives on the edges and he's getting pounded right now, and there's just some disconnect there.
Yeah, if I had to guess anything, I feel like it's just locating and executing pitches in the moment. It seems like he can go through an at bat and have some like really good pitches in that at bat, but then there's like two or three pitches where like you're like, whoa, oh my god, you know, I'm nervous for the second time through the order. So I don't know what it is, and it doesn't seem like John Lester and the Cubs know really what the issue is either. But you know, I still have some confidence that I think Lester, even as the season goes on, he'll find a way to be effective, even if that means like sacrificing maybe like his pride or something like that, and just kind of going down to like maybe two pitches or three pitches or whatnot, and just focusing on executing those three pitches or two pitches, whatever it may be. But you know, I don't know. I don't know what you have to do to fix John Lester. It's definitely not a confidence issue. It just seems like it's very much like he can't get his pitches to do what he wants them to do.
Right. Well, let's go ahead and end on that. We'll stop talking about the rotation. We can go to our second segment and talk a little bit about the bullpen. So yesterday,
yes,
we mentioned that Carl Edwards Jr. did not have a good day. Justin Wilson came in, threw two strikes that were called for balls, which was infuriating just to watch. I mean, they were both very clearly strikes. The problem, and I think what fooled the umpire, which is terrible, is the fact that Wilson actually missed with his spots, and Contreras had to move his glove to grab the pitch, and so it gave the illusion to the umpire that the ball was out of the zone both times. But he, you know, on his next pitch, got an out, popped up the batter. So Steve Cishek came in, bases loaded, two outs in the seventh. One pitch got the third out. Then he came and batted in the bottom half, struck out, and then pitched in the eighth. Got all three outs, struck out one, threw nine pitches in total, all nine for strikes, didn't allow any base runners. So this season, Cishek has a 1.82 ERA, a 2.83 FIP, over 10 strikeouts per nine, a whip just under one, and he's only allowed 34 hits in 54 and a third innings. When I spoke to Jim Hickey, I had an exclusive interview with him at the Cubs convention for an article I wrote for the now defunct FanRag Sports. And he said that Cubs fans would fall in love with Cishek because he's the kind of guy that makes a good bullpen into a World Series championship bullpen. And I'm kind of paraphrasing here. So is that pretty much where we are? Is he essentially like the bullpen MVP?
Yeah, I mean, the dude can do anything you want him to in that bullpen. You know, like you could throw Steve out there to close and he would do it. Cishek is great at going a couple innings. He has reverse splits a lot of times, so he actually righties do worse against him than lefties, or reverse, or lefties do better or worse than righties. And cannot talk today. Yeah, he literally, like, he's just a giant utility man. He gives the Cubs a ton of versatility in that bullpen. And I mean, he's got over a 10 K per nine right now, and striking out guys left and right. They can't square him up, really. I mean, he's been fantastic. And what I mean, like, up until like middle June, he hadn't given up a home run in almost a year. Like, he people don't hit him hard, and he also strikes dudes out. So I mean, he's exactly what the Cubs need to get you from like maybe the pitcher to your actual closer, to Brandon Morrow, hopefully, when he's healthy. He always finds a way. And I mean, you can't say enough about the guy. He just goes out there, fills any role, is almost always successful. Very few times are you worried about C-Shack coming into a game and executing.
Yeah, I mean, in his career, he's only allowed 27 home runs. That's really impressive. His career high in home runs allowed was 8 back in 2016. But other than that, the highest in a season is 4. I mean, this is a guy who just doesn't allow a ton of hard contact. He doesn't walk a ton of batters either. It's 3.3 walks per 9 this year, which is a little higher than usual. But he doesn't give up hits. He really kills right-handed batters. This is a guy who, like you said, Jim Hickey talked about it in that same interview I did with him. You could put him out there to close. You could bring him in the fifth inning to pitch 2 innings. You can bring him in specifically against righties. He can get lefties out. He just does anything you ask for. I think the Cubs got a major bargain with him. If you look at just ERA, which isn't a perfect stat, but just as a measurement, his ERA over the course of 9 big league seasons is 2.63. This year it's 1.82. Last year it was 2.01. The year before that, 2.81. The highest of his career was in 2015 when it was 3.58. So this is probably the most underrated reliever in the game. And the Cubs signed him for what, like a 2-year, $13 million deal. I mean, they gave Morrow, what, $10 million per year over 3 years or something like that, maybe $12 million. He's every bit as effective as Morrow. Maybe doesn't have quite the stuff that Morrow does, but he's every bit as effective. It just amazes me how some guys get such massive amounts of money based on kind of fluky stats like saves and, you know, when you get pitched in the game, which is totally for a reliever, not up to them at all. So it just amazes me that this guy signed for such a small amount of money when he's just been nothing but consistent.
Yeah, that was my kind of takeaway when I remember writing something when he first signed with the Cubs and thinking like, wow, this is a really good signing. Like, I don't know how this guy flew under the radar for so long. I mean, was fantastic for the Mariners. Like Jim Hickey said, was great when he was with Rays last year. He fills any role, and I've gotten to talk to him a couple times now, and he just seems open to pretty much anything. Like he says, like he was talking about how like when a closer, he, you know, really needed that adrenaline, and he felt like he needed that to execute. And so when he was coming into this situation with the Cubs, he just said he had to like find a way to basically get him in that moment pretty much at any time. And he says he, you know, he has a routine that he works through every day, and you know, that routine kind of allows him to get into those moments even when he is coming in like the sixth inning or even the fifth inning sometimes. So he just has a good mentality, a good approach to the game. And it seems like any moment when he comes in the pitch, he's just amped up, which that's impressive, especially when you're talking about a guy that is coming in to probably fill the sixth or seventh role here for the Cubs if they need him. So
yeah, this is the guy that I think even more than Morrow, because Strope has stepped in for Morrow really effectively. But this is the guy that I think if they lost him for any stretch of time or before the postseason, that would be like the backbreaking blow, just because he's been so versatile. And I could see I don't see Morrow being the guy that Joe Maddon says, okay, now we're getting close to the postseason. You might have to go two and a third innings. You might have to come in the seventh inning with one out. I could see C-Shack being the guy that Joe Maddon, you know, if the starter is in the fifth inning and gives up, you know, a couple base runners with one out and only goes 4 1/3, I could see him in the postseason saying, all right, Steve, you've got the next 2 2/3 innings, and then we're going to go tomorrow to finish it out. I could see that being the case.
Yeah, I could too. I mean, this isn't a perfect comparison, but like I could very well see the Cubs utilizing him like they did, like the Indians did with Andrew Miller in 2016. There's like no reason to think that C-Shack couldn't come into a game and, you know, pitch 2 innings and take away a massive chunk, especially if we see like a guy, you know, like a starter having a tough time through 3 or 4 innings, getting him out of there and put C-Shack in and, you know, just go to the bullpen throughout after that, but let him go 2 innings or an inning and a half or whatever. And, you know, I'm completely confident in C-Shack in that moment. I think he's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Just looking here, he's gone 2 innings in a game 4 times, and that's the most he's done this year. He's gone at least 1 1/3, 14 times. And he has less innings than appearances. So he's had a bunch of times where Madden's brought him in just for like 1 or 2 outs. Looks like, you know, something like 12 times he's come in just for 1 out. So like we said, very versatile. He's a guy who can come in and throw a couple innings if need be. The most pitches he's thrown in any one game this year is 33, which is a little surprising that, you know, he hasn't gone higher than that. But yeah, I think he's a guy that they could probably stretch and say, in any given moment, we may need 40, 45 pitches from you out of the bullpen. And I think he could do it. And that's got to be the perfect complement to a guy like Morrow, because when they had Chapman, they told him basically like, hey, you're going to go more than one inning in the postseason. With Wade Davis, even though Davis wasn't totally comfortable with it, they told him the same thing, and he did it, at least against the Nationals. And now you have this Morrow situation where I think they're probably a little more tentative to do anything more than just one inning, the ninth inning with him. I think Cishek was the perfect pairing to sign with Morrow, because I think he is that guy.
Yeah, I think Cishek is the guy that you would go and be like, hey man, you know, we're going to have you come in the seventh. You're going to go all the way to the eighth, you know, get us to Brandon Morrow. And I think honestly, I think he would be super amped up to pitch. If he told him you might pitch 40 innings or 40 innings, if you're going to throw 40 times in this game today, I think he'd be like, all right, yeah, great. That sounds awesome. Can't wait to throw my slider a million times. So yeah, he's got the right mentality for it. And I think that's a huge thing too. Whereas like guys like Davis or even like Chapman didn't feel comfortable going those innings and didn't really want to, but you know, knew they had to. Cishek is going to be stoked to do that. So he's absolutely been the most valuable piece of this bullpen, I feel like, you know.
If they get to the postseason, assuming they get there, in the NLDS, with the way the starters have been, do you think Madden's going to go crazy with the bullpen? Like we saw in the 2016 postseason, he kind of had a quicker hook for guys like Hendricks and you know, some of the other pitchers, Lackey. Do you think that Madden might just lean on that bullpen? Because assuming everybody's back healthy, we're going to have a bullpen in the postseason that probably features one of the starters, like maybe Jose Quintana, you know, somebody like that. It's going to feature Mike Montgomery. It'll have Justin Wilson, Cishek, Strope, Morrow, Edwards. Do you think there would be situations where, like, you know, maybe Quintana's in the rotation, maybe Lester's in the rotation, he goes three innings and you know, mows guys down, but then the fourth inning looks like, you know, the top of the order's coming back up again. Maybe Madden just pulls him out of the game and, you know, okay, so now the top of the order that stacked all their good righties against Lester, now here comes Cishek to mow down the righties for two innings. And then here comes, you know, Edwards, Strope, Wilson, and then Morrow. Do you think that's what he would do? I mean, I know John Lester would hate that, but it just seems like that's the best way for the Cubs to find success.
Yeah, I think that's the most valuable decision. I mean, I think, and just like the pieces they've been like quietly adding and stuff, and I guess not quietly, but just, you know, kind of like continually adding to the bullpen, like the Jesse Chavez deal and then Jorge De La Rosa. I don't know how much of a role he's going to have, if at all, in the postseason, but it just seems like adding these guys is giving them more and more pieces to kind of lean on more so. Because, I mean, I'm far more confident in a guy like Jesse Chavez coming into a game in the fifth inning than letting Quintana go through the lineup the third time, you know, like, and. Yeah. I think if you can get your bullpen, I think the biggest thing, honestly, for the Cubs is if they can keep the bullpen from being absolutely taxed coming into the postseason, 100% that's what Joe Madden should do. Like, his starter, you know, nothing but inconsistency. So unless, you know, Kyle Hendricks has a no-hitter through the sixth inning, you know, I think go to your bullpen. Just do it. They're more reliable. They're going to be more trusted. I think they're going to be more effective in those moments than your starter going out there a third time, because it just seems like the Cubs just their starters are so like on until all of a sudden they're not, and they're getting nailed, and you know, a home run left the yard, or there's two doubles in a row and they scored a run, and it's like, oh well, we don't have anyone going up to warm up because it's the fourth inning. And you know, so I think you 100% if Gomez's not leaning on his bullpen, he's not doing something right.
Yeah, I agree with that. Before we go to the final segment, let's talk a little bit about the upcoming Pirates series and just the Cubs' upcoming schedule. They face the Nationals and the Brewers at home. They took, what was it, three out of the five games, which is fine.
Yes.
They finished this tough stretch, the short tough stretch following the the kind of extended easy stretch. They finished it okay. They're coming up on a stretch where they have four in Pittsburgh, then two in Detroit, four at home with the Reds, and three at home with the Mets. Four teams that are really completely out of it. In Pittsburgh's case, they're a game over 500, but they're 5-8 in their last 13. They've lost three in a row, and they're coming home off a long nine-game road trip. So I don't like the idea of putting a number on it again, because I put a number on the first one, and that was just that only disappointed when they didn't match what I thought they needed to do over that stretch against the Padres and the Royals. But 13 games against these teams, I think the target has to be 8 wins, right? 8 wins, anything better than that is gravy. But 7-6 against these teams is just another failure of opportunity.
That's how I feel too. They've got to win these series. They can't, you know, like Bleacher Nation, Brett Taylor likes to point out that the Cubs haven't lost a series in like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or lost their like last 4 series or something like that. And that's correct, but they also haven't been impressive in any of those really.
I think that's Brett just trying to be Mr. Positivity, which is kind of like his shtick. He's relentlessly positive, and that's him in real life too. That's just who the guy is, and I love him for that. I think that that played really well when he was building up his popularity. That played really well against the often kind of negative narrative of some of the major newspapers that wanted to find like the cheapest negative angle, and Brett was always like, you know, Mr. Sunshine, and I think that's what attracted like a very massive following for him. So I get why he's saying that. The Cubs have won, you know, or not lost 5 series in a row, and even more so, they haven't lost a series at home since May 22nd and 23rd.
That's actually really impressive. Home field advantage for sure. But yeah, I mean, the Cubs got to come out and win these series, is straight up. You know, there's no way around it. They're just too close in this division. They didn't necessarily pounce on their opportunity here with the Brewers. They could have probably pushed it to 5 games if they'd won both. And, you know, they split the series. You can't be upset. It's unfortunate the way they lost that one game. But yeah, the Cubs can't have any more 7-0 losses. Like, that can't happen anymore. Each one of these, like, at least if the games are competitive each time and it's a 1-run, 2-run game or something like that, or the game ends on, you know, a 3-run shot or something like that, I can deal with that. But, you know, these 7-0 losses where the Cubs can't get anything going or squander opportunities, that's what I'm going to be concerned about more so than the outcome, I think. I mean, the wins are wins and we need them. But if the Cubs look terrible coming into this, out of the series, that I'm not going to be confident in this club. That, you know, they'll probably make the playoffs, but I'm not sure how far they go.
Yeah, and I mean, really what we're expecting tonight is a return to form prior to yesterday's game, right? Like, they are, at least to me in this moment, until they prove that they're consistently not, they are the team that scored 8 runs in 3 games against the Royals, the worst, you know, pitching staff in baseball. They're the team that scored 11 runs over their last 5 games prior to yesterday. They're the team that just like breaks out with the 8-run game or the 11-run game every once in a while just to like just be good enough. But I think coming into yesterday, they had a negative 28 run differential in the second half, but still had a winning record. So, I mean, they're finding ways to pull out close victories. It's just more often than not, they are really unimpressive offensively. And I think part of that's missing Bryant, but part of that is just not focusing and executing in situations where it calls for it. And, you know, they have a lot of great hitters in this lineup. If a guy's, you know, runner at second base with nobody out, and you've got like Rizzo and Baez and Wilson Contreras or Schwarber coming up, you should be able to score 1 run. I mean, that's missing Bryant is no excuse for that kind of situation. So that's how I feel about it. Like, again, 7-6 is an entire, it's just a failure again. If they do it, I'm trying to be confident and say that they'll win at least 8 games. I think 8-5 is perfectly acceptable. You would even hope for better than that, considering how bad some of these teams are, though.
Yeah, that's really what it is. The Cubs have to kind of show up against these bad teams, and, you know, they don't play their competition, but they just seem to have these stretches where offense disappears or, you know, is super hard to come by, and their pitching isn't good enough necessarily to overcome some of these. So they've got to hope to score some runs and put the pressure on early is what I really feel like, to give these pitchers the confidence that they need, because they're so wishy-washy sometimes when they come into these games, and they'll have 2 really good innings and 2 awful innings, and those awful innings cost them the game. So,
Yeah. Let's go to our final segment. We'll talk about the NL Central, and we'll talk again about that team that just keeps sneaking up on them. The good news is that the Cubs gained a game on Milwaukee with their win yesterday, and overall in their series, it would have been nice to win both, but Milwaukee's a good team too, so losing one of those two isn't all that surprising, and even more so in the meta view. They had two head-to-head games. The Brewers are the team that was behind. Really, the pressure is on them to win two, not on the Cubs. So the Cubs checked two games head-to-head off the schedule without losing any ground in the standings. Milwaukee didn't gain any ground. So overall, that's a win for the Cubs. But the Cardinals have won, I think, 8 games in a row. And they have won their first 3 of a 4-game set with the Nationals, who David Bote essentially broke with his grand slam. St. Louis beat the Washington Nationals yesterday 4-2. Matt Carpenter had to leave the game after being hit on the hand, but x-rays were negative, and he says he's fine. Pirates lost 6-4 to the Twins, while the Reds lost 4-3 to Cleveland. So the standings as of right now are the Cubs are 69-50. It's a pretty nice record. The Brewers are 68-55, 3 games back. The Cardinals are 66-55, 4 games back. The Pirates are 61-60, now 9 back. And the Reds are 52-69, not so nice. They are 18 games back. So the Cardinals are back in contention. I think they are a game. I think it might be in the wild card as of like right now. I didn't check, but they're a game behind the Brewers, who I think lead the top wild card spot. So this is a team that I think is 20-9 now since firing Mike Matheny. They're a dangerous team. And we talked about it yesterday. We talked about it a little bit on each podcast. This is the team I'm probably more afraid of right now between the Brewers and Cardinals. I still think the Brewers probably end up finishing ahead of them because this is the Cardinals' big hot stretch. And you can't imagine that they're going to keep winning at this pace forever. But it still just makes you uncomfortable. Maybe it's just because it's the Cardinals.
Yeah, I think their track record of being this team that always kind of finds a way to stay competitive throughout the year, even when they look like they shouldn't be. And their pitching is pretty good. I think it's better than Milwaukee's, and Milwaukee has some solid pitching too. They've got pieces that I know could make the Cubs struggle in a series, and they scare me a little bit. Especially because you've got a guy like Matt Carpenter who, assuming he's going to be healthy and fine, can absolutely take a game over. And there's not too many guys in baseball on the offensive side that, you know, just take over games. So I would be scared of the Cardinals if I was in a three-game series or something like that with them, or a 5-game series.
Yeah, and then I know and no one wants to think about this, but imagine going into a wild card game against the Cardinals. You know, how much that would be like meltdown city for the Cubs.
Yeah, that would be bad, especially imagine them losing at Wrigley to the Cardinals like 7-1.
Yeah, whoever you have on the mound goes out and gives up 5 runs in the first inning. Yeah. Like, oh my God, gouge your eyes out. That would be bad.
Broken in the Chicagoland area would be just so many. I mean, Best Buy would make so much money the next day, but I don't know. Yeah, they just. I mean, the Cardinals are good. I mean, we're not. They're not like, you know, Cubs. I think the Cubs are okay. But yeah, the Cardinals being the picture only complicates things, especially when we had pretty much written them off maybe a week or so ago.
Yeah. I think around a week ago they were 7.5 games back, and you know, like I said a few times, that 5-game spot is that kind of that barrier where you get under that and you really feel like you're an actual contender. If you're 5.5-6 games back, it really keeps arm's distance for the team that's ahead. So, the Cubs need – they don't have a ton of games left with the Cardinals. I think they just have the 3 at the end of the year at Wrigley. So they need to find a way to get ahead of the Cardinals. It all just starts with winning these easy games. I mean, nothing's easy in baseball. I don't want to use that word easy. But these games against bad teams, they should win. If they win those games, if they win 75% of the games against the bad teams, they're going to go on an absolute tear.
Yeah, I mean, that's because they've got some bad teams coming up, and especially the series coming up after, this run with the Pirates, who, I mean, aren't very good, but, you know, or had been on a really hot tear before. I mean, you just got to beat these teams. You got to win these games. Had the notch as many wins as you can right now against these bad teams, because you know you're trying to split, or at least take a game or two from these series with the better teams. And we see Milwaukee two more times, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. All right. Why don't we just go ahead and wrap there? This has been episode 126 of Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Ryan Davis. That's Sean Sears. I announced yesterday we did have a winner. I spoke to that winner. They checked out. I saw their post on iTunes for us. If you haven't left a review on iTunes, it's not part of a contest at this point, but please, we love those reviews. We read them. It's really nice. We have like 45 reviews with an average of 5 stars, so we appreciate that. It's been really good feedback from, especially since I've added Sean to the podcast. It's been really good. So thanks for interacting. Thanks for taking part in the ticket contest. And our listener who won, his name's Rob. I think he is going to, I think it's 23rd against the Reds. I think that's next week. Yeah. I think he's going to that game. I got him 2 tickets in, I think, the 500 level, as I promised, the nosebleeds. But I did find him a spot that wasn't behind a pole.
Well, there you go, man. I mean, what more could you ask for? I mean, honestly, there really isn't a bad seat in Wrigley, to be perfectly honest. I mean, I've sat in the 100 section and thought my seats were better than some of the 200 section seats. So,
yeah, honestly, that's what it is for me. I think the 100 and the closest are the best seats, because you're obviously closer to the field. But if I'm not sitting in the 100 or better level, I want to sit in the 400 or the 500 level, because you're right on top of the action. I feel like the view is just the best from up there. Like section, I think it's like 422, right behind home plate. That is just my favorite spot in Wrigley Field.
Yeah, it's honestly, it's really nice. I like sitting over there. This year I've sat a couple different places. I sat right on like the first base side, maybe like 4 rows away from like the first base like foul line, which was cool because I could hear like some of the guys talking on the field or whatnot. But yeah, I think the best view is definitely in the 400 or 500 sections. You see everything, and it's honestly fantastic to just take a look at Wrigley like that. So
I agree. All right. Well, again, thanks for listening. Thanks for taking part in the ticket contest if you did. And we will talk to you again tomorrow.